Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Bella Asks, in which we answer the question, how do I incorporate compliance into my performance evaluations? I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. As longtime members of the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance, or Bella, know, we offer a special concierge service whereby Bella members who have any questions at all about ethics and compliance can send them to us, and then our internal experts will provide an answer and/or direct them to a helpful resource for more information. Some of these concierge requests are rather specific to a particular company's needs, but many of them represent broad challenges facing Bella members. That's why we're using this show to thematically respond to high-level questions from the Bella community. Joining us to give those responses is Bella Chair Erica Salmon Byrne. Erica, welcome. It's great to see you again.
Bill, thank you so much for having me back, and particularly to answer one of my favorite questions.
Well, it's a doozy. So the question we have is, how do I incorporate compliance into performance evaluations?
Yeah. And Bill, as is my typical want when you and I are having these conversations, I'm going to take us to the why, right? Which is, why do I incorporate compliance into my performance evaluation process? And there's two reasons. I'm going to start with the broad employee reason first, which is we are all naturally incentivized to do the things that show up in the places where it is determined whether we are successful at work, right? So whether that's a formal annual performance evaluation process, a mid-year performance evaluation process, a running evaluation process, which is increasingly common for a lot of organizations. They've done away with sort of those mid-year or annual touch points, and there's an ongoing opportunity for feedback and a conversation loop. And so if compliance metrics are and doing the right thing is part of that evaluation process, I'm much more likely to pay attention to it because that evaluation process governs how I get bonused, whether I get promoted, all of those things that matter a lot to me. Secondary piece, in addition, from a why perspective, is for the last couple of years, we have been seeing incentives and compensation show up in all of the regulatory guidance. So whether it is in the recent speech that we saw from Deputy Attorney General Monaco, or it's in the evaluation of corporate compliance programs document that comes out from the Department of Justice, the most recent update of which was last year, you know, we see incentives again and again reflected in that guidance. And that goes back to the first why, which is one of the ways you get people to pay attention to things is you tie their pay and promotion opportunities to that thing.
So with regards to the evaluation of corporate compliance programs update, it's a great document and it has some really interesting language on how the compliance function designs and awards financial incentives at the top of the shop, so to speak.
Yep.
As we're coming off of the announcement of the 2024 World's Most Ethical Companies, you've gotten a chance to take a really deep dive into ethics and compliance best practices. So with regards to the ECCP update, what are some especially innovative or effective ways that you have seen organizations empower compliance to drive executive compensation?
It's a great question, Bill. So we've seen a couple of things that I would like to point our listeners to. One of which is the increased use of dashboarding. If you have a practice of regularly tracking the progress of particular parts of the business using different metrics, rolling those metrics together to dashboard different business units or managers against each other at various levels of the organization. Okay, and you might say, Erica, that's a word salad. What do you mean by that? What I mean by that is having a way of pulling together what I like to call not activity metrics, but performance metrics, right? An activity metric is, did all of your people finish their code training? All that means is that you chased them long enough that they took their code training. That's not the metric, right? Yeah. We can move past that activity metric to a performance metric. And the performance metric is, how quickly did they take their training? Did you have 100% of your team finish their training in the first 30 days? In the first 45 days? Did it require one reminder? Did it require six reminders, right? That gives you a sense of the extent to which that particular team leader is paying attention to the things that matter to the company from a doing the right thing perspective. Once you cross those pieces of information with things like safety metrics, near miss metrics, if you're a manufacturing company, you can pull on quality metrics. If you are a professional services company, you can pull on IT metrics, right? Who fell for your phishing exercises? All of those things give you a sense of how seriously a particular part of the business is taking doing the right thing. And then you can tie some of those performance settings into the evaluation process. So for example, this past year or this past WME season, rather, we saw companies with this kind of dashboarding having 10% of the bonus plan being contingent upon being green in all of the major performance metrics associated with the compliance program. So there's different ways that you can tie a piece of a particular manager's compensation to these particular kinds of activities or metrics rather, in a way that incentivizes those managers to pay attention to the things that the company needs them to pay attention to.
When we look at the ECCP, one of the things that I'm always struck by is how the Justice Department sort of admits that, you know, gauging how effective a compliance program is sort of an inherently subjective exercise. So with that in mind, and as we look at last year's update, when the ECCP asks, you know, what percentage of executive compensation is structured to encourage enduring ethical business objectives, what does it really mean by enduring business, you know, enduring ethical business objectives? Yeah. And doesn't such imprecise language create gaps between the letter and the spirit of what the DOJ is expecting from companies?
Bill, I feel for the DOJ every year or every time they update the ECCP, because it doesn't happen every year. But I feel for them because they're trying to write a document that can be applicable to any company that is going to wind up in front of them for any reason of any size anywhere in the world, right? And that's a real knotty problem to take on, right? Like that's a hard one. So I actually don't, you know, I don't criticize them for the imprecise language because they're trying to be directional as opposed to prescriptive in order to allow the ECCP to fit whatever circumstances of whatever company might be working with a given prosecutor at any given time. It's part of the reason why, you know, at Ethisphere, we spend so much time looking at the ECCP when we update our ethics quotient, because we're trying to pull the pragmatic out of the theoretical, right? We're trying to say, okay, what does that mean in four multiple select questions? Can we break that down into three different ways that that could potentially show up and then measure which one of those practices is most common? On the enduring ethical business activities or objectives or whatever the phrasing was, what I tend to point companies to with things like that is really a couple of things. Have you pressure tested your existing incentive system to ask yourself where you might have built in an incentive to cut corners? Has compliance been involved in the incentive setting process? So does compliance have a seat at the table when the company is saying, these are the metrics that we are going to be tracking to in any given year, right? We are going to build a bonus plan where the levers we can pull on are individual performance, EBITDA, revenue growth, whatever the numbers are that the company is gearing itself towards in terms of that annual incentive program. Does compliance have a role to play in setting those targets? Or is the ethics and compliance team involved in testing them to see if they have created an unexpected outcome because of the way they've been structured? So there's a setting piece to that, there's a testing piece to that, but in both of those contexts, there's a role for the ENC team to play.
Erica, when the ECCP talks about disciplinary measures available to management for enforcing its compliance policies, the language seems very much based around executive clawbacks. So I guess my question is, how effective are clawbacks really in their history as a disciplinary tool? And perhaps more importantly, if executives are reaching the top of the shop and are still of a mindset where the prospect of clawbacks is what's keeping them from misconduct, what does that say about the larger ethical culture of the organization?
Yeah. So clawbacks can certainly be effective, Bill, if they are public. So if you get yourself into a situation where an employee has engaged in misconduct, right? They have secured a commission for themselves by signing up a government official as a new client, utilizing, you know, bribery and other inappropriate methods to land that particular business. And the company finds that out, they investigate it, and then they claw back that commission, right? So they say like, hey, Mr. Salesperson, nice try to pull a fast one. We're taking our money back because you did it the wrong way. If you use those as teaching moments, right? If you're public about the clawbacks, as public as you can be, depending upon where in the world, of course, is always the caveat. But if you use that as a teaching moment, then clawbacks can be very effective because people will say, oh, they really mean it. I can see how it happens here. If instead you have the opportunity to do clawbacks, you do them very quietly and in private, you do them to get credit from the Department of Justice only, and nobody ever learns anything about them, they're going to be less effective, right? So there's a little bit of like the rotten tomatoes in the public square element of clawbacks. Yeah. You need to do it in the open in order for it to really have a deterrent effect. Now, obviously, yes, you will get your money back from the person who engaged in misconduct and all of that sort of thing, but it won't really be something that deters employee behavior. The much better approach, though, to the heart of your question, which is, you know, really, if we're going to rely on the stick, are we getting anywhere? Right. The approach that we always like to see is really around those incentivizing the right kind of behavior piece. Can I get ahead faster by doing the right thing? Can I be more successful by making the right choice? If you structure your evaluation and incentive program in that direction, then yes, clawbacks can be helpful because you need the stick too, but you're really much more reliant on the carrot.
As we enter the 2024 proxy season, how might best practices, especially as outlined by the ECCP update, manifest themselves in broader discussions around executive compensation, business integrity, and most importantly, financial performance?
Yeah, it's a big question, Bill. And right now it's a little bit of let's wait and see, right? So without question, executive comp is going to be a topic this year during the proxy season. We've already seen bits and pieces of that with investors saying that this CEO or that CEO has been overpaid or overcompensated, or the package is too generous to a particular leader. Most of that is focused around what I would call broader ESG goals and the utilization of those kinds of incentives in the calculation of the executive pay package. I have yet to see a institutional investor really leaning in on what I would call the ethical indicator metrics that ought to be woven in. So I'm looking forward to seeing that when we see it. There are elements of that in some of the conversation around executive comp, right? Around things like human capital management, culture support and creation, those kinds of things that really lay the foundation for whether or not you are in a position to say that you are leading in a business that is making choices and is incentivizing their people the right way. But you have to dig a little to get at those pieces in some of the proxy fights we're seeing right now. So I do think it's going to come up. I don't think it's going to be as obvious as I'd like it to be. I don't think it's going to be as obvious as it should be, but we'll keep an eye on the proxy season and we'll come back and talk about it if there's anything of note.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining us today and for lending us your insights on how compliance programs can use incentive structures to drive ethical culture.
My pleasure, Bill. And to all those Bella members out there, keep the questions coming, okay?
To learn more about the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance, please visit bella.ethisphere.com to request guest access to the Bella Member Resource Hub and to speak with the Bella Engagement Director. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been a special Bella Asks episode of the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe either on YouTube or on our podcasting platforms at Apple, Spotify, Google, and Amazon Music. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business. Ethics doesn't just happen. You need to put in the time. So make sure to register for the 15th Annual Global Ethics Summit, a live and virtual event in Atlanta, Georgia, from April 22nd through the 24th. Save $200 by using the code ETHICAST at registration. To learn more, visit attendges.com.